This show and the new Cosmic Psychos, I Really Like Beer Tour, is brought to you by Heaps Normal and Bodriggy Brewing. Get them into ya. How you going, yeah? How you going, yeah? How you going, yeah? G'day, Nighty here. Well, sadly, this is the final episode of season one of How You Going. But I've had a bloody good time catching up with mates, old and new, and having a good old yarn with them over the past year. For the final episode, though, it's going to be a little bit different. This episode is a tour documentary, and it's been put together by Sam Loy. Sam's the producer of the podcast, and he's the one who does all the work. He records it, cuts it together, makes me sound smart, and keeps the conversation going when I forget what I'm talking about or we've had too much to drink. So I told Sam to come on tour with us, and what he's put together is a tour documentary, I'm told, of what it's like to go on tour with the Psychos. So sit back, crack open a can, and jump in the van with me and Sam. Did I just make a rhyme? And we'll see you again for another season sometime later in the year. Good on ya.
I've been told that I should start this with something fun, something to hook you in before I start getting all deep and shit. People in the know reckon you listeners are a fickle bunch, and if you haven't been reeled in the first 3 minutes, then you'll switch off. So how about a story to set the scene?
When I had my first hip replacement, I was on oxycodone. I had this, what do you call it, epiphany, about how they invented beer, so it was like a volcano erupted and lava went down and heated up sand and formed a brown bottle. And that brown bottle sat there for years, and then yeast fell in there and some water fell
Somebody's
in there.
Somebody's beard fell in
but
there.
But I was sitting in the hospital just going, wow, fuck, that's how they invented beer.
Maybe a good introduction for a tour doco would be some audio from a gig. Or how about some words from the fans?
We saw them at Pandemonium and I was hooked.
You know, these guys were the first band I saw when I was like in fucking high school or something.
For me, it was just the true Aussie nature of the boys.
Getting on there, playing, doing their shit, having a bit of fun. I can relate to them in a lot of ways like that.
I think it's a raw energy, the unbridled passion and the lack of care about what anyone gives up about.
The excitement of seeing them the first time and realising you see something that's so absolutely special. And the excitement now is exactly the same.
Fuck, I don't know. Are you hooked yet? We're about 3 minutes in. How about we just get started, eh? I'm at a property called Spring Plains in central Victoria. This is Ross Knight's farm. He's the singer and bassist for Cosmic Psychos. Spring Plains was also the original name of the band. That was way back in 1982. They've been going that long. If any of you listening don't have an idea about the Cosmic Psychos, well, they're a punk band from Australia. They're known for playing simple, catchy tunes and drinking beer. Oh, and at the end of every gig, they like to drop their pants and moon the audience. A salute to rock and roll, as they call it. Despite never getting much love from radio stations, they've amassed a large and loyal following all over the world. Their 40th anniversary was celebrated with 3 nights of sold-out shows featuring the likes of The Chats and Amel and the Sniffers. Some say the Psychos' 1989 album Go The Hack inspired a bunch of Seattle-based musos, who then went on to pioneer grunge. Butch Vig produced one of their albums. Eddie Vedder personally asked them to support Pearl Jam on their last Aussie tour. They're an Aussie institution, and I'm lucky enough that they've asked me to tag along with them on their I Really Like Beer tour. For the next 4 days, I'll be in the van with them as they travel to shows in Canberra, Wollongong and Sydney. After I leave them, they'll play another 35 gigs to cap off the summer. Dan's probably yelling at himself. I've never been on a tour before. I have no idea what to expect.
And he started thinking about all the jabber city drank. And he goes, fuck.
I don't even really know how I'm going to put this doco together. Things I've done before, I knew what the story was going in. But what's the story here? Aging punk rockers play some shows and drink some piss?
What's up? You know,
Sam? He goes,
In the weeks leading up to this, Matt, my mate and one of the psycho's managers, told me to be like Louis Theroux. I think that means friendly, curious, empathetic, and a world-renowned documentarian. Right.
Where are we sitting here?
I reckon if I didn't know Ross, I'd probably crawl up into a ball of anxiety under a tree. I'm just going to hold my microphone and sort it out later. And pray I don't make a tit of myself.
How many can trip is this going to be?
Have you got your Jameson?
There's nine of us in what you could only generously describe as a 14-seater. First stop is Holbrook, just over the New South Wales border, a bit over halfway between Spring Plains and Canberra. Now, you're probably going to forget who is who, but let me introduce you. In the van is Ross Knight, 40-year veteran of punk rock.
It's the world's best hobby.
Digger, the roadie, and one of Ross's closest mates.
It makes me feel good being around these guys.
Dan Peters, drummer for Mudhoney, and for the next month, Cosmic Psychos.
I'd never played a Cosmic Psycho song in my life before I came out here.
There's Greg, the driver, who's one of the hardest working people here.
I could probably guarantee I've driven most kilometres in Australia.
We've got the support band, Good Sniff, made up of Elias.
Born to fight, but forced to work.
And Lockie.
Let the big boys work while the young kids play.
There's Good Sniff's manager, Al, who is also co-manager of the Psychos, as well as being in charge of this tour.
It's about putting on a good show, and it's, you know, being a good performer and being a good person too.
And finally, there's the Psychos guitarist, John McKeering, better known as Macca, who was born on June 21st, don't you know, the winter solstice.
Which is why I theorise that I spend more time when I can up at night than in the day.
Actually, Macca isn't in the van yet. He'll meet us in Canberra. But we're going to pretend like he is. And actually, if we're in a truth-telling mood, there's never any music in the van. Or even much chatter. It's just silence. Total fucking silence. This can't be normal. I'd been led to believe tour vans were raucous places full of debauchery and noise. This is like going on an office job work trip to the Wool Museum. Then it occurs to me, they're being quiet because I'm here. I'm the outsider, the documentarian with a microphone. They don't want their dirty jokes and flagrant disregard for the mores of polite society to be aired to the world. What would Louis Theroux do? Well, he'd probably turn around and ask Dan Peters how he likes being in Australia. He'd move to the back seat and ask Lockie and Elias about their excitement for their first big tour. He might even ask Macca about his time as a lawyer. What Louis wouldn't do is have a beer. But I can't take my eyes off the esky sitting in the aisle.
Let's have a look at this thing. What the hell?
Before we set off, Ross loaded it with beer and ice.
Get that out of there for a start.
I managed to smuggle a slab of heaps normal non-alcoholic beers aboard. I want to at least have the option of having one. But Ross seems pretty certain about what's allowed in his esky.
I'm not putting anything non-alcoholic in that esky.
Yeah, that's fair.
I've been drinking less lately. I think it's been good for my health, physical and mental. It helped that this show got sponsored by Heaps Normal and I got my hands on some of the freebies. Not very good training for 4 days on the road with the Cosmic Psychos, though. In the lead-up, manager Matt had some words of advice that are echoing in my head.
So, Sam...
No, they're not echoing that much.
Remember that these guys are professionals.
Yeah, that's better.
And you shouldn't drink at the same pace as them. I've tried. It doesn't go well.
Well, fuck, man. That just sounds like a challenge. People in the know say that stories need questions posed and answered. So how about, for the rest of the trip to Holbrook, can Sam go beer for beer with Ross?
Get to about Seymour, I'm going to try one.
You're not my mum, Matt. You can't tell me what to do. Plus, as Digger told me...
The band and drinking, it just is what it is. Cosmic Psychos is drinking. The DNA is the same.
It might not be what Louis would do, but it'd be rude if I didn't at least try to keep up. Not far out of Seymour, Ross has Digger pass him a can. I grab one too. Ross is sucking them down quick, but appears to be spacing them out. That's good. Behind me, Dan is getting stuck into an assortment of things. Beer, red wine, Jamesons.
How'd you go this morning?
He's been at it since breakfast.
Woke up around like 7 and had a beer or two.
At one point, I hear Lockie and Elias sniggering on the back seat like school kids. And directly behind me, the unmistakable sounds of Dan tinkling into a bottle. When you've got to go, I guess. About 40 minutes later, Ross grabs another. One for me too, thanks, Digger.
Hey, Greg, I could go for a piss at some point.
Another hour goes by, another piss stop, and Ross passes out another can as we get back in the van. Dan offers me some Jamesons. I take a big swig, trying to impress. Does that count as a beer? I think I've lost count on Ross's tally. I've been spending a bit of time writing in my notebook, so I haven't been as vigilant as I should. I better have another can just to be safe. When I was young, I was never taught what alcohol was or what it would do to you. It was just taboo, something you weren't allowed to do until you got older. So of course, with teenagers in a rush to be all grown up, it was cool to drink. I was a big drinker through my 20s and even into my 30s. I built an idea of myself as the life of the party, confident and charming. I thought that was me. With the wisdom of middle age, I've realised that was just the booze. Booze helped me come closer to the idea I had of myself. Booze helped me like myself more.
Hello, this looks like a good place to hang.
As the psycho van reaches Holbrook, I'm four cans down, two big swigs of Jamesons, Dan offered me another, and feeling all right.
Are we in our town?
And let's just say five cans for Ross.
And do you need another piss before we get there, Dan? Well done, Greg. Great work.
Amazing stuff.
I mean, it could be six, but he should be handicapped. He's been doing this a lot longer than me. Plus, two big swigs of Jamesons, hey? So, if there's no objections, the answer to the question, can Sam keep up with Ross, is a limp, kind of uncertain yes. I'll take that. Suffer in your jocks, Matt.
So it's the plan to, like, actually eat here?
Yeah.
Later, we're sitting in the Holbrook pub before dinner. We're drinking discount Asahis and swapping jokes and stories. Most of the conversation is led by Ross and Dan, with Al and Digger in support roles. The rest of us are content watching these old mates reminisce.
Luca goes, I know, I've got a great idea. Pull their pants down and we put a hole in the paper plates enough to get our agates and cocks out.
I buy a round of beers, and figuring I should make an attempt at moderation, I get an alcohol-free one for myself. The bartender gives it to me in a bottle, so I ask him to pour it out into a glass. To keep up appearances, I say. The truth is, no one here would give a fuck. Digger and Ross's friendship, nearly as old as the band, was founded on Saturday night sessions. Digger was one of the few who could keep up with Ross.
We would go out all night and then start drinking again on the Sunday. We'd just kick on all weekend. It was fun.
But now, because of some health issues, he doesn't drink.
I was pretty good at it too.
Pretty good drinking.
Yeah.
Did you find it tough to go cold turkey or stuff?
Nah. No. Just was time.
And no one gives a fuck. Least of all Ross.
To me, not drinking was a lifestyle choice I chose years ago. And
this is Greg, the driver.
I knew I could have had problems, but then, because I've had an abusive childhood and stuff like that, and it's helped shape me and give me resilience to overcome things. Because when tough time comes, you got to not fall upon anything else, but just battle through it. So I think.
Even Macca admits to not drinking as much when he's at home.
Just not into it. That's all it is. My body doesn't feel like it. And for once, I listen to my body. Yeah.
And you know what? No one gives a fuck. To paraphrase an Australian cinematic classic, there's no pressure here. Here, there's no pressure. Pressure, no. Elias?
Playing with these boys at the moment, they don't force us to drink. They couldn't care less if you don't fucking drink, you know.
We're called Goodsniff and we're from Geelong, Victoria. This is a fast one.
Goodsniff are Lockie on drums and vocals and Elias on bass. They're both in their early 20s and like other young people these days, and unlike what I was like their age, they seem sensible with their drinking. They're sipping slowly on their Asahis, and the worst I saw them get stuck into on the van was the vape they would pass back and forth. But it wasn't always thus. There used to be a third good sniffer, their mate Louis, who played guitar. And when they started the band as 15-year-olds, they weren't so sensible.
Like, you know, we started playing in a band, we're like, oh, fuck yeah, the beers, rock and roll, and you know, Louis looked older, so he was getting away with going up to the bar and buying drinks. Also used to, you know, little fucking brat teenagers, we used to go down to the caravan park in summer and going through everyone's fucking Eskies. So one night we like got like about 6 Eskies worth of alcohol. It just lasted the whole entire summer.
Lockie in particular struggled with his drinking, especially during COVID lockdowns.
I was drinking before school, drinking after school. I know, you're also a kid, so you think you can get away with it.
And we could see Lockie was going downhill, then that kind of just went, oh, fuck, you know. So we kind of had to, you know, knock him on the head and go, listen, you cunt, you know, fucking cut it out.
It was learning how to have a beer or a drink with a good crowd of people and just having a chill time. And it sounds funny because I was so young and everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? I love it that I was young because it's made me go from a fucking 15, 16-year-old and I feel like I'm mature.
My spidey sense is tingling a bit and I get the feeling there's more to their story. I'm not going to pry though. We're not there yet. On the way back from a trip to the loo, I see the stack of empty bottles in front of Ross and Dan. They're clearly the big drinkers in our little posse. Not that you'd know it from Ross's behaviour. Sober or drunk, he comes across the same. Friendly, calm, funny. Dan is more dishevelled, hair going every which way, but a content face, flushed red like he's been sitting in a spa bath for the last hour. They both tell me drinking is a daily habit for them. So I'm curious what impact their drinking has had on their relationships.
It's never caused any problems with me. I'm not a violent drinker. Mm. You know, I think I've been a good dad, a good partner and all that stuff. So, yeah, I don't think it affects me that way. But if it did, I would stop.
It's the same for Dan.
Yeah. I mean, I've been married for 30-some-odd years and have 3 kids that, you know, I love and they love me. And they say when that you know, I drink, I become funny and just laugh a lot, and you know, so and you know, I've been a fucking drummer for, you know, my whole fucking life, and you know, you spend so much time in fucking bars and pubs, and it's just kind of part of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm depressed.
I don't want to be glib about alcoholism. But the worst it seems to manifest in Ross and Dan are dad jokes, endless storytelling, and a desire to keep the party going. As advertised, these are blokes you can trust.
Like, you know, when I was driving kids around and stuff like that, of course I wouldn't drink. But It's okay to be a functioning alcoholic. It's okay because you're functioning and you're not hurting anyone.
You know, I think that's more common than you would know. I mean, the world is set up for functioning alcoholics.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, mate, we're all going to die. So the one thing I don't want to do, I don't want to be lying in a box with good teeth, a really clever brain, and a perfect body. Straight to the scrap heap for me. And I'm lucky enough, I'm still here. And I've outlived a lot of good mates. I've outlived one of my kids.
Yeah. You
know, I might be still here in 20 years, I might not. Makes every day fine. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Makes every day a good day. I think, anyway.
As I down my eighth beer for the day, including one stunt beer, I decide it's time for me to call time. It's been a good day. I've lost count and care of how many beers Ross drank. I'm sure he's left me in the dust, just as I'm sure he'll wake up feeling a lot better than me tomorrow. After the break, hangover number one.
Did you know that I really like beer? Well, I'm here to tell you about a bloody ripper of a Victorian beer called Bodrigi Brewing. And I bloody love them because they brew beers that taste like beer. It's beer so good, we're making a Cosmic Psychos draft with them. Available on tap at all good pubs. If your local doesn't have it, ask them why. Good on you, Bodrigi.
As predicted, the morning sun pierces my head as I step outside to find Ross waiting by the van. He's as cheerful as ever, beginning the day the same way he starts every day on tour.
You know, every day we get out to the van and go, this is the best day in the world ever, and you just talk yourself into it. And it's, you know, just little things like that.
And then we're off, on our way to Canberra.
The city of excitement.
There's a bit of chatter to start, but by the time we get to the freeway, silence. Everyone seemed fine with me recording the drinking session last night, so I'm pretty sure it's not me. Ross confirms this, telling me that things used to be different back in the day, but have changed for the better.
It used to be noisy, smoky, just uncomfortable. You'd be out all night, no sleep, get in the van, next thing the stereo's cranked up and there was no chance for recovery.
I might be harping on a bit about the van because really, it ain't so bad. Macca said it best.
Vans are fine. We're not the only people driving 4 hours to a job.
Not quite 4 hours later, we arrive in Canberra.
All right. I see you cunts. What time are we leaving in the morning? 40 minutes late. That's right.
We first head to the accommodation for a few hours. People nap and drink beer. They chat. They've given me a whole cabin to myself. I'm feeling pretty spoiled. I would have been happy with a couch. Officially, this is where Macca joins us. He's just flown down from Brizzy. Him arriving kind of makes things feel complete. Then it's onto the venue, which tonight is a bar at the University of Canberra.
Thank you, Greg.
Undoubtedly, tours and gigs are about the music. But there'd be fuck all music without the crew. Putting on a tour takes a lot of work, and much of that work is managed by Al.
I mean, last year, for example, I toured for 10 months.
Literally on the road for 10 months?
10 months of the year I was touring.
As tour manager for the Psychos, Al keeps the wheels greased, so to speak. He makes sure the venue provides everything needed for a good show, that everyone has a place to stay, and that we're where we need to be when we need to be there.
Timing is everything. If we're late for things, then it just fucks the whole day up.
The Access All Areas pass we all have for the tour, and which I proudly display and present to anyone who even remotely looks like they would give a shit, has a message on the back. It appears I'm drunk again. Please deliver me to the nearest pub. Or if I've shit myself, call Alan. He'll know what to do. I guess that's Al's job. He's the one you go to if you need a feed, or some new guitar strings, or if you've soiled yourself.
So just the Ludwig and amps.
At the venue, everyone is chipping in to get things set up for the gig.
More hands make light work, especially with loading in and out.
Greg seems to be always working. He drives between towns into the venue, unloads the trailer, sets up the merch counter, sells merch during the show, and then after, he'll pack it all down, load the trailer, and drive us back to the accommodation. There's no doubt some downtime in all of that, but his time never seems to be really his.
Sometimes there's no days off. Like, I've done 4 shows in 4 days, like Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, all driving. It's basically since 2013 I've been touring. In some ways I think I'm a workaholic.
He's been doing tours with the Psychos since 2018. I suspect he feels it's a privilege to be doing what he's doing, and he loves most minutes of it.
Psychos are a lot of fun, and I enjoy the experience. You see people like in the crowd just smiling and having a great time, and you think, my day is working hard, but then we make everyone else's life, because they go to work day in, day out, and we provide the entertainment for them to be able to keep going too and make their life entertaining.
Digger is flitting around like a ponytailed, bespeckled hummingbird. He knows where everything goes, which chord goes where, how the band likes their instruments to sound. He is also not entirely shithouse on the guitar himself. Actually, that might be Macca, but you get the idea. And in case you're wondering, because I was, Digger's real name is Darren. But years ago, on tour in Europe, he used to squeeze into the little section at the back of the van. And as soon as that section was dubbed The Trenches, Darren's nickname was sealed.
It was called The Little Digger.
Al, or Big Al, if we're talking nicknames, is at the mixing desk. On top of everything else, he also twists the knobs for the Psychos. That's not a euphemism, by the way. Macca used to live in Canberra, so he's already in the beer garden catching up with old mates who have come early. Ross is busy signing copies of his kids' book to sell at the merch counter.
Do they sell?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. It might be prop up the catering account.
Dan soon joins him to sign a broken cymbal.
Part of the rock and roll debris.
When I met you in the debris.
What song's that?
Faces.
Oh, the Faces.
Elias and Lockie are waiting by the stage for Digger to finish. When they're big, they'll have their own Digger to do things for them. For now, they have to set everything up themselves.
Check. 1, 2, check.
This tour is kind of a new experience for them.
This is the biggest one that we've done. You know, to play shows on a Wednesday night, a Thursday night, a Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Like, it's fucking incredible.
The hours pass. Everything is set up, and we play the waiting game in the green room. There's not a lot of prep for the Psychos. No vocal warm-ups or finger exercises. They don't hold hands and bow their heads in prayer. They just hang out until it's time to play.
This is the rock and roll life.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's a relaxed environment to do it in, the green room. This one is a small lecture theatre, but one that has 2 fridges big enough that I presume they're permanent fixtures. And there's a piano on the stage. We kick back and eat food.
Strasbourg and sauce sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
I want to cook up food.
And we drink beer.
Got a beer?
Do you want a beer, Sam?
I'm going back in there for another beer. Do you want one?
The band come and go. Macca is hardly there. He's either catching up with friends or just walking through the venue making new ones.
Yeah, there with his bloody Como Poly mates.
Dan disappears on a mission to find some foe in suburban Canberra.
All right, I'm going
to
go on a roam for a bit.
Ross makes himself a bed out of cardboard that he lays across 4 seats.
Being of a slightly different age now, I've mastered the art of a grandpa nap, which is, I reckon, the best thing in the world ever.
I don't reckon he got much of a kip, though. Soon, the sight of a lectern on the stage leads to the Canberra Lecture Series.
Do you know the most efficient way to dry yourself is to have yourself dry, all the while moving towards the heart.
Human skin cannot recognise wetness.
When you feel something and you go, that's wet, you're actually detecting temperature difference.
There was a time there were these two young boys in the back of the van who saw me peeing.
It's the sort of pop-up game I imagine happens a lot on tour.
So I will never pee in the van again.
No one here seems to have a hobby. No one even brought a pack of cards. So they have to invent things to pass the time.
You know, we're in Italy waiting for a gig to happen, and me, Darren and Ross, you'd sit on a chair and then we're throwing bottle tops at you, and it's called Hit the Dickhead.
Finally, it's time for Good Sniff to take the stage. The venue is a quarter full, but those who come late will regret it. Lockie drums with raw, barely contained power. It's incredible that he also sings. There are moments when I think his voice sounds like James Hetfield's, but obviously more youthful and less soaked in bourbon. He hasn't even reached the potential in his voice. It'll be amazing to hear once he goes through puberty. Elias is enigmatic on stage, barely saying much but rocking out. He gets an awesome sound out of his two Mustang basses. With the press of a pedal, he makes his bass sound like a guitar. And then he presses another pedal and he gets both the bass and the guitar sounds. As he plays, he swings his well-washed, dyed blonde hair from side to side as he shakes his head at the beat. He's like punk rock Barbie refusing to eat his carrots. And then it's time for Cosmic Psychos.
G'day.
I'm ashamed to admit it, but this is my first time seeing them live. The excitement in the room is a little infectious. There's smiles all around. On stage, Ross is the same as he is off it.
How old are you?
Friendly, funny.
I've got 2 years up on
a little bit rude.
But I look a lot younger than you, you old cunt. Good on you.
Night he plays with hunched shoulders and his bass hanging low. He sings into the microphone like he wants it to break. Across the stage, Macca wears a cheeky grin as he busts out the power chords, or another face-melting solo. His bright eyes shine through his overgrown white beard, making him look like the free-spirited, hard-drinking brother of Santa Claus. Holding it all together is Dan. His playing is so precise, you'd swear he's got a clockwork inside of him. Instead of guts and Jamisons. Ross often downplays his musical achievements to me. He even shies away from being referred to as a musician. But who cares what you call them? They're bloody entertaining and can still write a catchy tune. For better or worse, the songs off the new album slot right in with their older stuff. This is one of their older ones though. I should have used the new one, but I put them elsewhere. After the show, there's no encore. They've been at it for an hour under the hot lights, and at their age, well, that's enough. I'm the first down to the van the next morning. I don't point this out to anyone, but I wear a smug badge of honour under my jumper for the rest of the day. With Macca in the van, I squeeze into the back seat with Lockie and Elias. We chat about movies, AI, their experiences in the music business. They've never sold any physical copy of their music, like ever. They've got to rely on money made through playing shows and selling merch, and that's not enough to scrape by. You know, the realities of being a musician today is a new revelation for me. Most play in multiple bands or find work in completely different industries. Ross operates and hires out heavy machinery, Macca's a public servant, and Dan plays in three bands and drives an Uber. You know, until recently, it was like before I actually got to know musicians, I thought they were all living the high life.
We get bits of it from time to time. And I sort of look at it sometimes and go, well, not what did I do wrong, but why can't I have some money? Because I wouldn't say I'm poor, but I wouldn't say I'm particularly well. I don't own a house or anything, never have.
It's a tough slog, and it begs the question why they do it.
Well, a wise man once told me there's two reasons you do a show, is for promo or money.
For Good Sniff, at the start of their careers, like obviously they need to tour to promote themselves. But I don't feel like any of these older guys care about promo or money.
We're not looking to sell records. We're not looking to, like, you know, still, it might happen. It might just happen. No, there's none of that. And that's fucking great.
The truth of it is, like an alternate version of a Cyndi Lauper classic, these boys just want to have fun.
I'm very fortunate with the Cosmic Psychos because they are very easygoing.
The whole thing's not work to me, it's fun.
Everything's a gag. They're a lot of fun.
How can you not have fun?
They don't generally give a shit about much, except beer.
But it seems they all know that sooner or later it's going to have to end.
The only reason why we are still doing it is because we can do it.
Because I know there's going to happen one day when I won't be able to.
I just want to keep doing what I can do, well, as long as I can do it. I mean, I like coming and playing guitar with and playing in groups with other people, and that's the main thing, you know. And I'm not going to stop, because I don't feel 53. But what I have learned is time moves quick, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to think I could keep doing it for a few more years. But I can walk away going, oh, I had a ripping time. You know, am I going to be worried that we didn't achieve some kind of goal? No, because we didn't have a bloody goal. So it's kind of like we're just doing it, bumbling along, you know, happily.
So where are we? You want to tell us where we are?
We're in Wollongong.
What are we doing here?
About to get hit by Greg.
I'm given my own cabin again, away from the rest. I know there's nothing in it, but I can't help but feel like I'm at school again, left out of the cool group. I'm beginning to think that more than to do a good job on this trip, what I really want is to make some new mates. Everywhere I look, there's mates. Lockie and Elias are great mates.
You know, we don't stop fucking talking.
Cosmic Psychos are great mates.
Yeah, Mac is one of my best mates in the world ever. Well, he has to be. Or else I'll punch him.
Digger and Ross are great mates.
I guess that we support each other as well. Connection's the most important thing to being a human. And the stronger a connection is, you know, the more fulfilment you get from that connection, I guess.
You can see that connection in the way Digger and Ross talk about their old mate, Robbie Rocket Watts.
We just sit and watch him. Yeah. Some nights. Oh, just, yeah. It was so good. You just sit back and just watch him. Just
yeah, Digger and I, we playing a gig. It's
so good.
I'd look at Digger and Digger looks at me and I couldn't believe what was coming out of him. Just standing there, look, sweet little face going.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
Robbie was the guitarist for Cosmic Psychos from 1990 until 2006 when he died of a heroin overdose. He was 47.
We all went through points of sort of blaming ourselves for, like, keeping an eye off him, but he did what he wanted to do. So, yeah, we can only support someone for so long. And if they're not willing to have a red-hot go themselves, there's nothing you can do, nothing. But, yeah, it shook the foundations a fair bit and did take a while to get going again. It was, like, just mentally and just getting over the heartache. Yeah, you've lost a family member. And that's just always just sad, just really sad. It's got to the point now, I don't like to think about his death that much now, but think about the good times we had and how much he used to make me laugh.
Sitting out in the sun, drinking beers with Ross and Dan, when Lockie and Elias come back from a swim.
Hit the ocean or the pool?
Louis Theroux would take the opportunity to have a chat with them about their friendship and the origins of Goodsniff. He'd ask them about Louis, Goodsniff's former guitarist, and why he wasn't in the band anymore. And because I'm three beers in and the sun is shining, that's exactly what I do. After the break, the story of Goodsniff.
If you're a bit like me and you want to say no to water, then be like me and always keep a slab of Heaps Normal in the fridge. It'll get you through those good times that are too good to be wasted. And when I'm on the dozer, Heaps Normal non-alcoholic beers give me the same heavenly taste of beer when I just can't afford the hassle. I call them stunt beers because you get all the action without anyone doing a mischief to themselves. Heaps Normal, too good to be wasted.
Elias and Louis met at primary school on the Bellarine Peninsula in Victoria, but they weren't really friends. Years later, they played for the same local soccer team, where Louis was the goalkeeper.
He would just, instead of watching the ball come towards him, we'd watch the aeroplanes go past and wouldn't give a shit about it.
Louis was this quirky, free spirit with no filter.
You know, it's probably bad, but, you know, couldn't give a fuck about what he said.
Elias was drawn to that.
Because I'm a bit of like an overthinker and, you know, a bit of a stress head, and he was just couldn't give a fuck.
They got close and started hanging out. Then as part of their school's music program, they formed a band. It was Elias, Louis and two other mates. But then after a while, those two other mates left the band and Lockie joined.
Yeah, me, Elias and Louis just started jamming and it was fucking great.
Lockie, Elias and Louis didn't feel like they fit in at school. Playing music gave them a reason to be there.
It kept us on school grounds, which is great, and it kept us busy.
Soon they were playing gigs, and soon after that, they started getting noticed by the music scene in Geelong. That led to more gigs and more notice. They were developing their sound, led by Louis on guitar and vocals, and his devil may care attitude.
Louis would fucking strum the fucking shit out of his guitar that he didn't need a distortion pedal. If he felt like getting up on stage and not singing, he would just mumble the lyrics the whole fucking set. So just depending on how he was feeling, you know. So he was just like, you know, he didn't really give a fuck what you thought about him. You like the band, you like the band. That's just how he kind of thought, you know.
Spending so much time with each other, the boys became close.
It was just fucking three brothers, you know. We would always us three. Always.
And then, in early 2020, the pandemic hit and we all went into isolation. It was tough on Louis.
Louis was a very, very social person and, you know, not a lot of people knew what the fuck was going on and how long we were going to be inside for. So I think he just thought that was going to be, it's going to be like that for a long, long, long time.
He was drinking a lot. The brothers would stay up late messaging each other on Snapchat. One night, Louis was drinking more than usual.
And he was like, oh, yeah, I've drunk a fair bit tonight. And you go, oh, okay, you're good, yeah, all good.
Elias and Lockie went to bed. Then Elias woke the next morning to his mum in his room.
And she was bawling her eyes out, and then my dad was standing there as well. I'm going, what the fuck is going on?
Not long after saying goodbye on Snapchat, in the early hours of April 26, 2020, Louis had taken his own life. He was only 16.
It's weird because you're like, you don't know what that is. You're so young. You know, like, you know what death is, but you don't think it's going to happen to you that soon.
Like Ross and Digger, the boys asked themselves if there was anything more they could have done for their mate, if there were signs they should have noticed. But at 15 and 16, they didn't have any knowledge of mental health issues. They didn't even have an understanding of what to do if they were worried about their mate. All they had was each other.
Then Elias came around. You know, we both gave each other a massive hug and gone, you know, we're there for each other. And that's when you know that you're fucking brothers for the rest of your life, no matter what happens. When you lose one, you you gain your one that you already had even more.
In the weeks and months that followed Louis' death, Lockie and Elias grieved in different ways. Lockie isolated himself further and sought to mask his feelings with alcohol. Elias went the other way.
I kind of was like, right, I need to deal with this in a really good way. I need to not drink. I don't need no more fucking smoking weed and none of that shit. And then started surfing, which was really, really good. That's kind of how I got through it. I was like, I need a constant distraction. I need to distract myself from this. Not forget, but distract.
It was because of grief that Lockie found himself drinking before school just to get through the day. And it was because of grief that Elias became a better version of himself. And eventually, through brotherhood and music, he was able to help Lockie do the same.
How's it fucking going?
At the University of Wollongong, Good Sniff makes some new fans. An aging rocker at the back with white hair bangs his head and pumps his fist. Later, I'll see two punters buy a T-shirt. I busy myself chatting with people in the beer garden. I get stuck into the generous writer in the green room. I'm constantly unsure of how often I should be carrying my microphone around. I don't want to miss a moment, but at the same time, I don't want 100 hours of tape to get through. In the end, I'll have 20. I also don't want every interaction I have with the guys to have a recording device between us. Mates before the job and all that. And so, I sit down for a feed with Dan, without my gear. The conversation we have about the Seattle grunge days is lost to memory. It was a good chat, though. I told him that growing up, one of my idols was Pearl Jam bassist Jeff Ament. Dan tells me that Jeff was just the guy who lived down the street.
My kids have always said, you know, when they found out what I did and toured, it's like, you know, my son Will said I'm a teeny bit famous. And it's only when I walk into a room that I'm playing in. And
I like Dan. You know, he carries no pretension at all.
You know,
as one-fourth of Mudhoney and for one hot minute the drummer for Nirvana, and he could very easily be an arrogant tossbag. But he's warm, interested and friendly. Sometimes when he's talking to you, he'll reach out and gently touch you on the arm or shoulder. Just one of Digger's important moments of connection that lets you know that you're human. For Dan, music was never about the spotlight.
You know, I mean, I had a fucking really shitty childhood. So music became just like my safety net, like, you know, where I could just sit and lose myself in outside of, you know, the chaos of my world that I lived in. And I mean, of course, you idolize rock stars and you go like, oh, my God, that's crazy. You don't ever think that that's even near possible to like travel the world one day playing music. That doesn't enter your mindset, you know.
But even though he grew up idolizing rock stars, he doesn't see himself as one.
Not at all.
Ross is the same.
No. Far from it. I'm not even a wannabe. Some people are born rock stars. You know, I was born to dag around a farm and drink beer and drive bulldozers, I guess, and play with me mates. And I just think I'm lucky getting away with it for as long as I have.
Ross's idea of who he is humble. It's relatively simple. Similar to the way Dan sees himself.
A father, a husband, you know, a dude that's kind of scraped by and made kind of a life out of not a lot. And I shouldn't be here right now. And for all practical purposes, it's just as far as like how I was raised and how I grew up. And maybe be it not for my focus of wanting to play music, fucking I don't know where the fuck I'd be.
As people in the music industry, it seems like they're constantly fighting against an idea others have of who they are and what they're about.
We've got this persona that we get up there and make an absolute racket and swear and all this. Everyone does that. This is not doing it on a stage. But in reality, they are on a stage doing it. It's just a different stage, you know. And like, let's look at this tonight, Sam. no disrespect to this venue or the gig or anything else, there's going to be 100 people here. We're not fucking setting the world on fire. You know, I am what I am, and that's it. And I'm getting too old to not be it. And you got to be a good person about it, otherwise you don't continue. If you be a fuckwit, it fucks up pretty quick. Fuckwit City, place where you belong. Fuckwit City, place where you belong. I've seen people get a bit starstruck around the band. They get all nervous and you can sense they're not completely relaxed. And to be honest, I get a bit like that hanging around with Macca. It's not because he's in the band or anything. It's just because he's got this swagger, if you could call it that. Maybe out of all of them, he's the most like a rock star, just in jeans and a blue singlet. He walks around like he's ready for a chat with anyone, but doesn't give a shit one way or the other. He is effortlessly himself. I don't imagine he ever gets FOMO. Wherever Macca is exactly the place he wants to be. He'd probably balk at my description, but Macca is cool as fuck. The crowd are all smiles during Cosmic Psycho set. I mean, how could you not?
I wanna be like David Lee Roth and 40 girls to suck me off.
The secret is at the end, if you look up there and everyone's smiling, you go, well, they're either laughing at us or they're laughing with us, so you can't go wrong.
I want to get around in pantyhose and there's nothing wrong with that.
After the show, there's new people in the green room. There was another support act tonight and a few Psychos fans get all cheeky and pop in. Ross chats with them all.
I will always talk to someone because I don't want to be the bloke that goes, look, mate, fuck off. Because that happened to me when I was a kid. Just a something little. It's okay to stop and go, no worries, mate, and thank you. Love your band, Naughty, love you. And you go, well, thanks, mate, good on you. But that's no effort. But if I was to stand there and berate them and go, leave me alone, I'm a fucking rock star and don't touch me, well, that's just a waste of energy, isn't it? Absolutely. Complete waste.
The next day, on the way to Sydney, my head hurts. We were up until the early hours, drinking around the table in Ross, Digger and Dan's cabin. Once the beers were gone, we moved on to the bottle of vodka that had been included in the rider. It was a top night, except for the commentary I had going on in my head, questioning how I was going to put all this together.
The story could be really cool, but you just...
Back in my cabin, I had some thoughts.
If I was Louis Theroux...
No solutions.
It's the idea that...
But fortunately, I left helpful recordings for my future self to decipher.
You have one soy crisp left.
At the bump in Sydney, there's a bit of electricity in the air. Capital City crowds will turn out in force for the Psychos. And after hanging out and getting to know Good Sniff during the week, I'm excited for them. Tonight is a great opportunity for them in front of a big crowd. It's going to go off. It's been good watching the response people have to them. They've got some talent and a unique sound. And it's a sound that is owed, in part, to Lockie and Elias not wanting to replace Louis with another guitarist. They were originally thinking of disbanding the band, but then made the choice to stay together.
We did a bit of a Louis action and went, you know, fucking who cares? Do what you want to do, not fucking care about anyone else.
And when they worked out how to get a similar sound from just the two of them, they had a sense of relief that Louis wouldn't be replaced. In tribute to Louis, they wrote and recorded a song called Louis the Milkman.
And we put it out and it just went fucking berserk.
Suddenly Good Sniff was the talk of the town. Not just the aforementioned online berserkness, but also radio airplay, on-air interviews, and local news stories. B But soon, Louis' death became their identity as a band. Others were deciding who they should be.
A lot of people were just seeing us as that suicide band. I don't want to forget, of course, but it's just like when you're constantly fucking having to deal with it, that's when it starts fucking with you a bit. And like Lockie as well, I think that's what was fucking with him. He was just constantly getting brought up.
So it's called Let Me Know.
It hurt that it was all some people wanted to talk about, the reminders of their lost brother and the pain. After a big gig, all they wanted was a slap on the back, but some people just wanted them to wallow in misery. It took a while, years in fact, but the band slowly began to be viewed on their own terms.
People seemed to be enjoying the live show and the music, and it's a good feeling.
They'll always carry Louis with them, but he's a part of the early chapters of the Good Sniff story, and there's still heaps more to write.
You know, Louis will always be remembered, but we've kept going. We've kept doing the fucking hard yards of this shit, so we're still going. Yeah.
As they play, I think about the last 4 days. I ask myself what Louis Theroux would do to tie all this together, how he would pull in the thematic threads and relate Good Sniff's story to Cosmic Psychos, where he'd place himself in it all. But then I ask myself a better question. Why the fuck do I care what Louis Theroux would do? I mean, really, I'm not Louis. When I was young, like Lockie and Elias, I probably wanted to be someone like him. But now that I'm getting older, like Ross and Macca, I realise I'm not. And if I compare myself to him, I'm always going to be disappointed in myself. And what good is that? That idea of my future self, the one fuelled by booze and youthful self-assurance, it was conjured up by someone else. I've spent so much of my life trying to live up to past Sam's idea of who present Sam should be. I'm over it. He doesn't know me. I'm just a normal guy. I've got great kids and a supportive partner. I love them with everything I have. I'm a good friend. I make half-decent audio docos. I don't take myself too seriously. I love board games and Thai food and Tom Waits. And all of that is better than anything I could have possibly imagined.
Thank you! Thank you, Sydney. Have a good night. Cheers.
I figure at this point, I can either continue to be disappointed because I'm not the superstar I wanted to be when I was 20, or I can change the way I judge my life and have fun while I still can. Which, in a clumsy segue that we're all just going to have to live with, is what Cosmic Psychos is all about. I record the Psychos show for a bit, but then put my microphone down and just get amongst it. I'm a punter in the crowd, singing along, playing guitar solos on my thigh, banging invisible drums. I forget about all my doubts and insecurities. Music has always given us that chance to escape. Whether it's your inner critic, or stress at work, or a shitty childhood, it's a place you can go to let it all float away. And the brilliance of Cosmic Psychos is that's all they want you to do. Their songs aren't trying to fight starvation in Africa or trying to be a poetic reflection on missed opportunities or personal growth. They just help us to have a good time. As a band, I'm sure they don't set out to do this, but Cosmic Psychos remind me that we're just little specks on a little speck in a big sea of dust. so we may as well have some fun. And this week I have been having fun. I mean, hanging out with these guys, how could you not? The Psychos will be visiting 35 more places on this tour. 35 more places where they'll make people smile with their silly little songs. 35 more places to have a beer with their mates, where every night is a Saturday. 4 days ago, I felt nervous and doubtful that anything good would come from this. I felt like I'd make a fool of myself, to the guys in the van, and to you listening. But now that I'm leaving tomorrow, all I feel is that I'm going to miss my mates. The next morning at the airport, I get a text from Ross. Thanks, Sam. Been a fun week. Safe trip and enjoy your weekend. For weeks after, I'll get jealous every time there's a new message in the WhatsApp group L set up for the tour. They're travelling down the East Coast at the moment I record this, posting pictures of fishing trips and barbecues, making references to shared jokes I'm not a part of. People in the know say the audience is the most important consideration when putting something like this together, that I should be making this for you. But you know, that's never sat well with me. I don't even know you. I've made this for me and for the 8 other guys in the van. Because all throughout my trip this week, I was asking myself what Louis would do. But I was asking about the wrong Louis. The way Lockie and Elias talk about their mate makes him sound like he'd be a good fit with the Cosmic Psychos. He was a free spirit. He was himself to a fault and never cared what others thought of him. So, with that in mind, this has been the story of my 4-day trip with the Cosmic Psychos. I had fun making it, and I reckon my mates are going to like it. If you like it too, then that's great. But if you don't, I don't give a fuck.
So there you have it, just a bunch of mates travelling the country and having a good time. Well, that's a wrap for season one of How You Going. Thanks for listening. We've had a bloody great time putting this together and looking forward to getting into season two sometime later this year. A big thanks to our sponsors, Heaps Normal and Bod Riggy, for all the support and, more importantly, the beer. It's good stuff. How You Going was produced by Sam Loy, with me doing most of the talking, and executive producer, Matt Weston, whatever that means. Cheers. Have a good one.
How you going? Yeah!